Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, this happens to be Memorial Day. Big thank you goes out to all the service members out there, the past and present. Also, good thing it's Memorial Day because it's a memorialization of the podcast we once did. Oh. You know, it's been a few weeks, you know, without it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had to bring it back.
You know, I didn't mention this to you before we started, but the Our Magazine came out with its best of 2021.
Yeah, I left your accolades out for a reason.
Did you notice that the category was removed entirely? The journalist category was not there.
It's because we were hammering on it all the time, every week bringing it up. I must have got tired of it. It's like, well, you know, Eric's got the lifespan out of it, you know, that Joe wanted at least. I think you didn't like it all the time when I'd bring up you were the second most popular columnist/blogger. But that's all right.
I wonder if I maintain my status because they did.
Well, yeah, in perpetuity.
Right.
No, you're right. Yeah, like it's no longer being held. So, yeah, you're holding it forever. It's not like you lost it. It's not like somebody else is the second most popular. Well, technically somebody else was because you were tied with someone.
Right, right.
But like you still are both tied. Nobody's replaced you. All right. But I won't bring it up anymore. That'd be probably in poor taste. Maybe like if everything works out well, we're doing this in a few years still. Then I'll bring up that you were the 2020, second most popular sports columnist or blogger for our Detroit magazine. All right. It was a good time for us to be off because not a ton happened, you know.
Yeah,
this rookie camp, and you know, there's really not too much to glean from that, except they, after rookie camp, they made three roster moves with guys that were in rookie camp that weren't mm-hmm. signed to the team. Tight end Charlie Talmo Poe, cornerback Alex Brown, safety Elijah Holder. They were all added after a good showing at rookie camp.
Yeah, the big name, I guess, if you want to call it a big name, is Elijah Holder. I think he is a guy who, because he can play at safety and at nickel, he has some versatility. In that mini camp, he was running with the starters, so like that's a nice feather in his cap as well. I think Brown is right there with him. Brown has a little bit more experience. He's more of a nickel, but he was a guy who was with the Chiefs. He was went undrafted in 2019. He was with the 49ers and bounced around a couple other teams, practice squads, ended up with the Chiefs. The Chiefs called him up during their 2020 Super Bowl run. And, he was, you know, he contributed on special teams and he saw a little bit of the field. And so he has some more experience and it's, you know, with a good team. So that helps as well. But then last year he tore his ACL in camp and he missed all of last season. Now, after missing all of last season, he was still able to get his body right and be recovered enough to try out with the Lions. And then, you know, earn a contract. So these are both secondary guys. These are both guys that can play a lot of, like I said, the nickel. I don't know if I'm like leaning towards them having like any inside track, but in all honesty, maybe I'm going to change my mind. Maybe Brown has a little easier path because the only guy ahead of him on the two deep is AJ Parker, the UDFA. So if he can beat out Parker, he might be the number two nickelback. But I don't know, will they actually keep a number two when they have, you know, the other nickels or the other corners on this team? It's hard to say. But Brown and Holder are interesting. The tight end Charlie, he joins a group of what, seven tight ends now?
Yeah, Dan Campbell's going to want a lot of tight ends.
Yeah, technically eight if you count Hunter Bryant. A couple of those guys are H-back, so they, you know, maybe they start, you know, competing with the fullback as well. So I don't know. It sure seems like they're going to keep three tight ends. When Ben Johnson, the Lions tight end coach, spoke to the media last week, he talked about, he didn't say you know, oh, we're going to have three or four, but he kept saying, we want the three best guys. We want the three best guys. So like, he's basically saying, we're going to have three tight ends. And two of them are locked in it with Hockenson and Fells. And then it just becomes which one of the other five are going to make it. And if maybe one of them can be an H-back, maybe they can bounce one of the other fullbacks. It's still a little bit, you know, it's pretty early to tell on that stuff, but a lot of tight ends, couple of fullbacks. I have a feeling if they need to add another player down the road here, you know, coming out of OTAs, it might be a tight end who ends up getting their walking papers because they have a ton of guys there and they can't even keep half of them.
All right. A player that wasn't in rookie camp, but they did sign also after the rookie camp, is offensive tackle Darren Paulo. Spent some time with the Broncos last year. Joel Heath, Spartans defensive tackle, former Spartan defensive tackle. Yeah, I was looking forward to seeing him on the roster and seeing him in the preseason, but he tore his ACL in the OTAs and has been placed on IR. So he's gone. We are down to 89 players on the roster. So we have not hit, you know, we're below the 90 player maximum with the news of Todd Gurley coming to visit this week for a workout.
Yeah, so Paulo makes him 90. Heath takes him back down to 89. Then Gurley comes in for a tryout on the third day of OTAs, which was the day that the media was allowed to go. And so we don't really know anything that's come of that. My assumption is that it was a friendly tryout, like a – hey, I was part of the team that drafted you, so I'm going to give you a tryout to get your name back out there. I don't know if he's necessarily someone that they were serious about, but they need bodies, you know. And you've got Swift and Williams, who are your 1-2 punch, and then you like Jefferson enough that you were willing to cut Kerryon Johnson. You have two undrafted guys in Boyd and Mills, but Boyd's been injured. He was injured in rookie minicamp, and he didn't play in OTAs either. So I don't know how much Boyd is he might, you know, be on that, sitting on that injury bench, and it could end up getting him passed by. And if that's the case, then yeah, you need another running back. Is Todd Gurley the answer? I don't think so necessarily. I've talked a little bit about him previously, and so I want to hear what you have to say, and I'll kind of recap my thoughts on him too.
All right, he's not necessarily a shell. I mean, well, wait, he is a shell of his former self. Yeah, in 2017, he had a 2,093 yards from scrimmage, right? 1,305 on the ground, 788 through the air, 19 touchdowns, right? And then he followed that up in 2018 with 21 touchdowns. You know, he's the star back for the Rams. You know, he was the offensive workload carrier, you know, of the team that went to the Super Bowl with Goff. And last year, though, okay, the performance was way down. 195 carries, 678 yards, 9 touchdowns. It wasn't his worst yards per carry season of his career. That was back in 2016, where he averaged 3.2 per carry, 3.5. Last year, he still caught 25 passes. He still scored 9 touchdowns. You know, I mentioned, like, he's not useless. Obviously, you know, sadly for him, he's 26 years old, and he's on the downside of his career.
Yeah.
You know, if you got him for nothing, I can't argue with it. Although I'm more of a fan of bringing in young players with more upside than what Gurley has. But, you know, I wouldn't totally be against it. You know, poor Todd Gurley.
Yeah, you know,
he's now at the bottom of the barrel.
He led the league in rushing in 2018, and was it 17 or 19? It was one of them, but I know it was 18. And then, so he led the league in rushing twice, and then has just been a shell of himself. Like, injuries have just taken a toll on his knees. And if you looked at Kerryon and said his injuries are significant enough that we don't want to, you know, put him out there, I mean, Todd Gurley is basically in the same boat, right? So I don't know how you go from one injury prone, you know, running back with difficult knees to another one. And so the only thing that I think he brings to the table is experience, right? Swift is just going into his second year. Williams is in his fourth, but he's only had like 500 touches in his career. Jefferson, Boyd, and Mills are all rookies. So you don't have a lot of experience in that running backs room. And so if you want to get this guy, like if you want to get a Todd Gurley, who is going to, you know, be able to bring some of his knowledge to the field, but also, you know, be able to contribute in a pinch. I think how much money are you going to be willing to spend? Is he worth a roster spot? I don't know. Like, I think he's probably your fourth running back. Again, like looking at how they value guys, right? Which is like kind of crazy. Maybe they would prioritize him as third because that's what coaches tend to do. He's not three. He's not beyond higher than three, and he's probably four. So I don't know if he would enjoy that situation. I don't know if the Lions would be willing to put a potentially disgruntled player in the locker room, or maybe he's just looking for a paycheck now, because like you said, he's kind of at the bottom of the barrel. So tough spot. Nothing's come of it yet. And then I don't know if anything will.
Yeah. I don't, if they haven't offered him a contract, then it doesn't look like anything's going to happen.
Typically. Yeah. That's the way it works.
So, you know, he's not going to be around. Would it be a big deal if they brought him in? They'd make it a big deal, but it wouldn't be. He's just another guy on the roster. Sadly, you know, he was a great player. You know, he was at the top of, you know, all the fantasy drafts there for 4 or 5. He had such a short career.
Yeah.
You know, Adrian Peterson and Frank Gore, you know, they can go forever. 36, right. 37 years, 38 years old. This guy, Peterson had I would say he's between them. He's better now. The Frank Gore discussion is not for this podcast, but it's a long one about how great Frank Gore is, right?
Sure.
You know, I would feel he's a surefire, absolute Hall of Famer because of what he's been able to do in his career. You know, at the running back position, in a position where there's no longevity, he's been nothing but has longevity, and I think that deserves its place, right? But at the same time, you take your best Frank Gore years, I'd rather have the best Todd Gurley years, right?
Yeah.
And so that's too bad that his career is, you know, winding down at the age of 26. It's too bad he doesn't have a lot more left in his tank.
Last year, he played about, I think, 45% of the snaps in Atlanta, right? But he only averaged like 3.2 yards a carry. So
3.5 a carry, 6.6 on a reception. Not like, it's not totally useless, but, you know, there's still some production. I mean, is that better than what was the best Lions back last year? What did they put out? You know, let me look that up.
I think Swift had better statistics, even though they used him. They didn't use him as often early. And then
he missed some games due to injury.
Correct. Correct.
Okay. Adrian Peterson led the team in rushing last year, 604 yards, 156 carries, 3.9. yards per carry. So you know, that's not that much better than what Todd Gurley was
brought right to. and fans, and rightfully so, just complained about Peterson most of the year as well. So it's a tough, I don't know, I wouldn't be excited if they brought him in. That's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy you wouldn't have said that a couple years back.
All right, so that's, well, we'll see what happens with Gurley. I don't think they're going to bring him in. All right, moving on to the contract situation.
Hey, hold on. I'm going to pause you for a second. I want to ask you a different question. I'm going off script here a little bit.
That's fine.
Ben Barnwell of ESPN wrote an article. Bill Barnwell. Thank you. Wrote an article about potential free agents and teams that he would connect them to, and he said that the Lions would be smart to sign right guard Trey Turner. Remember, he had all like 3 or 4 Pro Bowl years with the Carolina Panthers. I think he had 3 All Pro and 5 Pro Bowl or something ridiculous like that. I mean, it's crazy. He basically almost every year he was some sort of postseason honors. Then they traded him to the Chargers with Anthony Lynn, and then he had a very down season, and he's still a free agent, and with the depth or lack of depth, I guess, on the interior with this line, is Trey Turner a guy that you're interested in? And part two to that, if you're interested, Barnwell suggested a price tag of, I think, like $5.5 million for a one-year deal. And would that price tag appeal to you, or would it need to be different?
No, I would be in with that. I mean, I guess like the larger question is like, what will eventually be available to this team, right? Looking with what's left on the free agent market and how they, I don't know if they're waiting for the June 1st date. You know, I don't think they're going to make any trades with any veterans or anything, but you know, $5.5 million is a ton of money in actuality, but in football terms, it isn't a lot, especially for only a one-year contract. Look what they did with the defensive tackle on the one-year $8 million deal from the Packers. Why am I blanking on his name?
Couple years back? Mike Daniels.
Mike Daniels. All right, so they did that with Mike Daniels. It wasn't it didn't turn out well, but it wasn't a bad move. You know, it was 1 year, you know, like you're not ruining the future of the franchise by doing something like this. Was his down year due to injury?
I just think he didn't fit well, or I don't know. Yeah. There's no real good answer for it. I believe it was just a performance based. I'd have to double check, but I thought
then I'd roll the dice because as long as it's not injury related that like, well, you know, this is his career is kind of over because, you know, his shoulder's ruined or whatever. But like, if he didn't fit the Chargers scheme, which is, you know, now he's coming here and Lynn's the offensive coordinator, but
So I mean,
be against it.
So let me add a couple things in to see if this changes your mind or not, or if it just adds more weight to what your decision. Their interior offensive line, the reserves are Logan Stenberg, who is in the second year, didn't play an NFL snap on offense last year. Tommy Kramer at right guard, who is a undrafted free agent rookie.
And then
Evan Brown, who played at center last year when Ragnow missed the one game after breaking his throat.
I can never get over that. Broken throat.
Right.
Crazy. He just had a broken throat. He's fine.
And played through the rest of the game with it. No big deal. Yep. But yeah, so Evan Brown is your best interior guy, right? And outside of Evan Brown, Kramer, Jackson, Stenberg, none of them have an NFL snap on offense. I don't think Heim does either. I'm not 100%. And if it is, it's not much. So you're basically, you've got one reserve on the interior with any real experience. So
there's a cat, you know, there's a caveat on that statement because of Tyrell Crosby.
Yeah,
and if he's not starting at offensive tackle for whatever injury befalls Taylor Decker or Sewell, I would think they'd go there first.
Yeah, he could easily
if Vitae or Jonah Jackson got hurt. That would be my guess.
I agree with you. I just think having Turner available would be a nice buffer, I guess. Now the price tag
would be a big plus. Unless did you hear Hank Fraley talk at all about Stenberg? Like, is he getting any better? I mean, because it would be interesting to hear. It's like, oh yeah, no, he's an NFL player. It's just taken him a year to, you know, for us to get him ready. You know, do we hear that out of him at all?
No, they've only talked about the front five, the starting five, and Crosby. Those are the only guys he's really touched on.
It'd be interesting to know what they actually thought about him. Because he is a fourth round pick. Like these guys, they should be, you know, now, albeit it's not their player, although he's kind of a Fraley guy because Fraley was around last year. Like you should be able to develop these guys. If there's a guy, I do understand when they don't play for a year, it turns like, well, we're developing him. He's not ready to play. And maybe he is now. I don't know.
He's basically a right guard he has a right guard mentality and he plays left guard. And last year they tried to cross train him at center, which failed. And so he's a square peg and there's a bunch of round holes that they're trying to fit him into. We all kind of knew that he was going to be developmental though. Right. Like that was part of the MO was he took a lot of penalties. He's got a great mentality. He wants to beat people up, but you know, just technically he's not quite there. But guys can make leaps from one year to the next, especially on the offensive line. Look no further.
It just doesn't happen here very often. That's why we're so not used to it.
But look no further than Matt Nelson, who was basically an afterthought. And then all of a sudden he was starting a Bears game or taking significant snaps in a Bears game. And it can happen, right? Like I wouldn't be surprised to see Stenberg take a Matt Nelson type leap where he can be a reliable backup, but we're not there. And because we don't know exactly what we've got in him, I even though offensive line is arguably the deepest spot on the roster, I still think they could use a little bit of depth there. The hiccup for me is the price. Once their rookies get under contract, then they'll have about $17.5 million to spend. They're going to save about half of that for in-season moves and IRs and whatnot. So that leaves them with, you know, like $9 million. You're giving up over half of that $9 million to get a guy who's a backup. But as you always say, you typically are going to see these offensive linemen, right? So
yeah, well, end up playing.
I'd like the price tag to be lower. I like the player. I wouldn't mind adding him.
Well, I can. I can agree with that. I can agree with that. I'll still stand behind what I think. But yeah, we'll see what veterans get released, you know, later, to where we could use up some of the rest of that available cash.
There's a couple of other like safeties that are out there, but yeah.
Mentioned those safe. We talked about that in the last show, I believe.
Yeah, I don't want to go rehash it all up again, but I'd rather them spend $5 million on Turner than $1 million on Gurley, if that tells you what I feel.
Sure.
I feel about right. There you go. Okay.
All right. Now, speaking of dollars and cents, let's talk about the contracts.
Mm-hmm.
So, Penei Sewell signed last week. So did Lee McNeil and Justin Jefferson. I think they signed earlier than Sewell, right? Sewell was last week, but the other two were a little bit earlier than that.
Yeah, McNeil and Jefferson signed ahead of rookie minicamp. Sewell couldn't be there for rookie minicamp because of the COVID, and then he was able to sign before OTA. So it's possible that some of the other rookies have signed, but the team has not announced it, and they usually like to have their moment of glory with these guys when they sign. So it seems like Levi, Ife Melifonwu, and St. Brown are all guys that are and Derek Barnes are all guys that are playing without a contract in OTAs right now, which is,
dangerous.
Yeah. Slightly dangerous for them if they get hurt. But I think if they get injured at practice, even without the contract, there's still going to be some, there would still be some leverage for them to get in insurance. It's typically dangerous to not get those guys in under contract for the player, not for the team. But I imagine if they're not done, they'll be done soon enough.
All right. The Frank Ragnow extension has been revealed. 2021, he'll get $4.07 million. 2022, $7.55 million. Escalates in 23, $16.45 million. In 2024, dips down for some reason to $12.8 million. Slightly back up 2025, $14.05 million. Caps off in 2026, $16.35 million. Palatable. I think that's a palatable deal.
Yeah, for sure. Because when you look at how the cap is moving, it sure looks like they're going to be able to overcome the deficit they occurred last year by adjusting the cap this season and then adjusting the cap next season. By taking hits the next two seasons, they will probably make up the money that they lost. And if there's any type of dip in 2023, they're expecting that to be offset by the new TV deals. So 2023 is really when people are expecting the cap to kind of really rebound, right? We went from 197 or 198 down to 180 or something like that, right? It's in the 182.5. And so that was a big drop. Like that was a much bigger drop than what we've seen in the past. And if deal with the fact that the Lions just, they shed a ton of dead cap money based on their cuts. They have more dead cap money than anyone else in the NFL. And that totals almost $44 million. And so you take, you got to immediately, you're losing $44 million on that. So you're not left with a whole lot of spending money. So you needed the contract this year to be low. Next year's contract, you're going to lose a lot of that dead money, but some of the contracts that you have given an extension to renegotiated, some of those will come due next year. There's also going to be players that get cut next year, which created some more dead cap. But that'll also free up some money. And then, you know, they'll be in a better shape to add more, some higher profile free agents next year as well. So they'll be in a better spot next year. But they needed their big players to have workable contracts the next through to get through this deficit. So this deal with Ragnow allows them to do that. Before the extension, he was only supposed to get like $3.5 million or something like that, a little over that. So this only goes up to like $4 million. That's nothing in the grand scheme of things. And then to keep it at $7.5 million next year was also very astute from the Lions organization, because when they had given him that fifth year option, he was going to count for $13.5 million. So now you get him for $6 million less than that. Right. So you're saving money next year, which is really going to be where you're going to start from a grand rebuild scheme. That's really where you're going to start spending money. And then by 2023, when you're getting into it, you'll be able to, that 16.5 won't be that bad. So it's a nice contract. He's going to get a ton of money up front with the signing bonus. He's got almost $70 million guaranteed. So it's, you know, not like he needs it. He's arguably the best player on this team, right? I mean, right. Realistically. And so it's a good deal. It's a team friendly deal. It's a Ragnow friendly deal. Win-win all the way around. I'm very happy with it.
Now you mentioned the dead money. And this is, it's partially due to having a new general manager, right? Because they got it. Sure. And the big change of mindset, team mindset, yeah, and schemes and all that.
Yeah.
So that contributes to a lot of dead money. The Falcons GM had like a, I think it was the Falcons GM, and I'm paraphrasing the statement because I don't remember word for word. It's like, you know, we can't just keep, you know, kicking all these salaries and all this money down the road because, you know, it's going to hamper us, you know, in the future. And, you know, I just hope that's not what Holmes is like, but he might be. You know, they like to wheel and deal a little bit, you know, but I hope this dead money issue is more because of like what they're coming out of, you know, and what they're trying to transition into.
I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's one, when you're going into a rebuild, you're looking at every contract on the roster that you don't like, and they basically got rid of all of them except for one, which was Nick Williams, and Nick Williams took a pay cut in order to stay, right? So Matt Stafford, obviously the trade cost a huge chunk, but they didn't like Jesse James' contract or Trufant's or Coleman's or Daniels or Christian Jones, Danny Shelton's. You could argue they didn't like Joe Dahl's contract for what he was doing, or he probably would be here, right? Remember, right. He was a guy that we flagged and said at $3.5 million, he could be a guy, you know, that isn't worth that kind of money, but he still has experience, which this team doesn't have on the interior, which we just talked about. So if they would have kept Joe Dahl, the interior reserves would look a lot better. But then at the same time, he wasn't worth that money. He was, you know, we talk all the time about him being guard center versatile. But last year when Ragnow had to be replaced, it was Evan Brown that replaced him, not Joe Dahl. So I just think they looked at the contracts they didn't like, and they said, we're going to shed them all. And that's what happened. Now that they're signing their own contracts and their own guys, hopefully we won't see many more bad contracts. Right. A couple of them got extensions. you know, there's a couple of contracts that you could argue are bad, and that they could be ones that it just wasn't advantageous to move on from them this year. Maybe they'll be moving on from them next year. I think we all are familiar with who those guys are at the top there, but you know, they're going to have, he doesn't want to be saddled with players that aren't his and contracts that aren't his. And you know, it's, you're going to have to be very strategic these next two, this season and next season. This season, I think they've approached it with that, you know, strategy of we have to be economic about it. Next season, I think they're going to open up the purse a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Yeah, and this year's a wash anyways. Like, they can go 1-16, you know. 0-17 would be a little tough to handle. But we have 1-16, right. They'll be all right.
Well, I'll tell you what, just to kind of put a cap on this salary cap talk, they have set an estimated cap ceiling for next year at $208.2 million, right? So this year it's 182.5, and they're saying next year's could be as high as 208. Now, that's the max. They're saying in order for us to offset the amount of money that we want from the deficit, we're not going to exceed that 208. And quite honestly, it could be a lot lower. It really depends on the revenue that they bring in. Now, they're expecting fans to be in the buildings at full capacity moving forward. And most of the states are making their adjustments accordingly. They're passing their laws so that things like that can happen. And if that happens, that ends up creating more revenue. It'll make up their loss. It'll give them a little bit more. And instead of them, so they'll be taking a step forward. I think no matter what, they're going to go up from that 182. But they're not going to take as big of a step as, you know, we had been seeing over the last decade where they, you know, are going up these huge chunks all the time. So we'll see how it goes. We'll see. The 208 is a good number because it gives the GMs an idea of where the teams are. You know, you can look at your team and you can say, okay, where are we at next year? And if this is my max, I know I can't be, you know, ridiculous and like trying to go get some guy who's going to be super expensive and outside of my budget. Right. I think the Lions right now with the contracts they have signed next year, they're like dead middle of the league in available cap space. Like I think they're at 16. Right. So they're fine where they are. They're in a decent spot. Like I said, they're going to lose a lot of cap, and there's a couple of guys that could help them if they don't spend a lot of money. Like if they don't sign Trey Turner and they pocket that $5 million, and that $5 million can roll right over into next year. So there's going to be ways for them to increase money. It's really interesting. I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to put you on the spot again, and this is a tough one. So they're the highest. They have the highest amount of dead money in the league. But there was a breakdown of how much money do they spend on offense and how much money do they spend on defense. So again, keeping in mind that they've lost the majority a quarter of their cap to dead money. Where do you think they are in defensive spending compared to the last of the league? Are they like in the bottom third? You want to pick a number? Like, you know, I'll tell you, they're in the bottom third in both offense and defense and spending, because that's just how rebuilds work. But you want to take a guess where they are on defense?
They're 30th in defensive spending.
Believe it or not, they're 25th.
A lot of people are skimping on defense.
Right. The highest paid defender that they have is Trey Flowers, and he takes up almost $20 million.
I was thinking about, because between Collins and Flowers, yeah, they are spending a lot for those couple guys.
Collins is 7.3, Jeff Okuda is 7.6, Romeo is just 4.5 because of his yeah, deal
spread out.
Yeah. And Brocker's got the same thing; he's is pretty low. But yeah, there's a couple of guys at the top that really took a couple of big chunks out of that. Now, offense, same question: where are they in offensive spending?
Oh well, that now I'm going to put them lower. Now I'm going to put them because. Between Goff, Decker, and Ragnow, mm-hmm. and Hockenson, probably relatively, he probably should make. I mean, in the end, he'll sign a contract where he'll make more than that. And Sewell, oh boy, I got to put him in that 24th.
Believe it or not, they're 32nd. They are dead last in offensive spending. I know. I was surprised by that too. I would have thought it would have been a little bit reversed. I think the big hiccup here is that it's the Goff contract. Remember the negotiation? He was renegotiated.
Not a pay cut. Yeah. He's not getting paid a lot this year.
Yeah.
And Ragnow's got not getting paid a lot. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. And Decker. And Decker too. Decker is he took a very team friendly deal this year as well. Next year, I would say their offense is going to be closer to the middle of the pack when or next couple of years, because when Decker's money comes due and Ragnow's money comes due and Goff, if he's still if he's still there in those couple of years, he'll be making 30 plus million next year, right? So but right now they're dead last in spending on offense, they're 25th in spending on defense, and number one in dead cap. But this is how rebuilds work, right? This is what you have to do when you come in to an organization that you want to blow up. And so they're already making moves for the future though, which is all part of it as well. So that's it's a good step, but they don't have a lot of money being spent this year, and I think you can see that in the team depth. A lot of youth, a lot of unproven guys as depth.
All right, let's move to coaching. You believe the Matt Campbell rumors that he was offered an 8-year, $68.5 million deal with the Lions?
Well, I wrote a couple articles on my thoughts. So again, I'm interested in what you have to say. Do you believe, one, that he was offered, and two, it was a deal that substantial?
I'm guessing he wasn't offered because he would have had to have taken it. Like Matt Campbell decided to stay at Iowa State, right?
Yeah.
And he didn't go to Iowa State. He wasn't raised in Ames.
Right.
Like, this is not necessarily some dream job of his. He grew up in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
He went to college for 1 year at Pittsburgh, and then he went to Mount Union. Like, if a team offered you $68.5 million, and and the Lions are the Lions, right? People don't like the Lions. They're perceived as a laughing. Even if you perceive them as a laughing stock, you're taking the money.
Yeah, because coaching money is almost all guaranteed.
Yeah. You could get fired and go back to Iowa State and everything will be fine. You would have taken the deal. Yeah. So, he wasn't offered that deal. That's I would think that. B, was he offered the job? I don't know. Maybe. But I would probably lean towards no, because I think he would take it, because he'd take the money.
Yeah, look, he said he was returning because three of his seniors said, we're going to return if you return, coach. And he's not turning down $68.5 million because of three players that are going to be there for one year and then leave anyways. Right. Like, that's not how it works. I was going to say, since the report was originally said, both Dave Burkett and Albert Breer have come out and refuted that was not the offer. And it was never, and there was never an offer to begin with. Right. So, they have both shot that down. The news came from a college sports writer at CBS who just casually mentioned this on a show where they were ranking the Power Five coaches. And he just casually be like, look, if that was a true story, it wouldn't have come from him. And if it did, he would have already broke it himself. And CBS would have wanted that. Not like, I think it's a bunked rumor. If you look at the numbers, it's 1 year more than Matt Rhule got in Carolina. It's a little bit more money than Matt Rhule got per year than Carolina. So it seems too close and just too absurd in my mind to be true.
Yeah, it's probably not true. And plus, also, when you think about college football coaches and the pro and college coaching, you're coaching amateurs, but you're not an amateur. You're making tons of money. Like, right. From what we've learned over the years when it comes to head coaches at college programs or NFL teams, like, they're not good people. You know, no offense to them. They aren't. No, like, I mean, we see it time after time. Like, they're not the greatest people on the planet, especially college, the way they leave and stuff. Like, he would have left. He would have taken the money and left. It's not, it's hard to believe he would have turned down $68.5 million, especially since, like, Iowa State can now, like, in the next 2 years, go in the tank and go 3-9 twice and get fired. Like, right. You know, what a terrible move, you know, that would have been. And, right. Like, I mean, and they probably won't, because he seems to be a good coach. But, he probably was never offered that.
There have been rumors of the job he's actually targeting for a while now, but I'm not sure if you've heard any of those rumors.
No, I haven't been paying attention to those rumors.
The rumors are he's got another college in mind that he's targeting.
Well, your college? I may have heard that somewhere.
Yeah, I heard that. I heard that a while ago, and then I heard that again recently. When this whole hubbub got brought up again.
I mean, they extended the offensive coordinator's contract, mm-hmm. gave him a raise too. Mm-hmm. And you know, the offense just keeps plummeting to lower and lower levels. So I don't think anybody's going anywhere there. I think that group you got, they're sticking. They're staying. They aren't going anywhere. And which, hey, in the end, I don't want to say anything too bad, because it might end up being like a good thing. There is something to say about stability, you know, but I don't have
yeah,
to
we'll see
we've got all yeah we'll save college discussions for another time.
I mean look he like you said, he grew up in Ohio. I think he went to Toledo or coached at Toledo, right?
He was the head coach at Toledo.
Right,
you would think he'd want the Ohio State job.
Like, yeah, that
would
right.
Be what I'm sure mm-hmm. they all do. I'm sure every coach wants the Ohio State job or Alabama, or you know, now Clemson, but probably not even Clemson. You know, once Dabo leaves for the Alabama job, you know, when Saban retires, you know, who knows? All right,
back
rookie
to
the mini camp. There are 32 guys rookie mini camp.
Yep,
and they had their drafted and undrafted rookies there, and then they had a bunch of guys that, you know, were basically trying out.
Yeah, they had five tryout guys, and they had like coaches filling in at like quarterback, right?
They must have loved it.
So I got to see rookie mini camp. I didn't get to see OTAs last Thursday, but the rookie mini camp it was interesting, right? And I think Jeremy, who went there on last Thursday, we both came away with basically the same impression, and that was that it's a much different feel of how practices are being run. It's gone are the 3 minutes on this drill, blow the whistle, sprint to the next one. 3 minutes on this drill, blow the whistle, sprint to the next one. You know what I mean? Like, it's they spend more time, working on technique here. They still have those short increments of time, like 7 minute periods or something like that, but then they'll go from 1 7-minute period to like a 20-minute period. You know what I mean? Like, there's not this like dire urgency to like squeeze as much in as possible, and but the intensity is still there. Like, it's not like I think one of the things that we were taken aback by going from Caldwell to Patricia was that this higher level of energy that Patricia brought was to try and create some intensity and trying to create, get these guys in great shape. I think what you're seeing with Campbell so far is that you can still find a way to create intensity and focus without also having to sprint these guys from activity to activity to activity. And so it's a more methodical approach, but at the same time, he stalks around looking at different position groups. The coordinators are stalking around looking at different position groups. The position coaches are really excited and they're motivated. You don't hear a lot of negatives anymore. You hear a lot of praise, which is, again, a different change. And, you know, like, okay, for example, they led us a lot closer to the field as well. We were like, we're like, I don't know, 18, 20 yards away from the field now, whereas before we were like a football field away. It was pretty exhaustive. And so now we're a lot closer to the action. And right in front of us at mini camp was linebacker drills. And they only had three off the ball linebackers at the time. And so Barnes and Anthony Pittman were the rookie linebacker starters, right? And they were doing a lot of rotating, and Beckett was the other one, the undrafted guy Beckett. And at one point they had linebacker coach right in front of them, giving them direction. And then, so like I said, it was like two at a time. So it was like Barnes and Pittman right on either side of the linebacker coach. And then outside of Barnes was Anthony Glenn, who was just basically staring at him, like in a crouched, like center fielder type of look, where he's just like really intensely like watching the different technique. And then on the other side of Pittman was Chris Spielman, who was just sitting there, and he was more stoic and standing, but he was just eyeballing everything. And I'm thinking, my gosh, the level of intensity that these players have to feel right now with Glenn Spielman and their linebacker coach right in front of them. I'm like, that's gotta be a lot of pressure for these guys. And what was interesting was when they did something right, it was celebrated. And it was like, yes, that's how you want to do this. And if it wasn't, it was okay, come back here. Let me show you the move, how this slight tweak to your form or a dip that they want them to do or whatnot. And it was just a different approach. It was a different approach with the players. And so in turn, what you have with the players is you have guys who are having a little bit more fun. It seemed a little bit more relaxed. They had like designated like periods of like competition that was there to create like fun. And you saw some smiles and some celebrations when their teammates did well. And it was neat. It was a different approach than what we have seen the last few years. And it's still a lot of intensity and just a lot of, a lot of coach interaction. Like, I guess that's not surprising with all these former players, but it was mostly like the position coaches and the coordinators. Campbell just kind of like was walking around and overseeing. He did jump in on the tight end coaching at one point, no surprise. But for the most part, he was like, you could see him like wanting to itch to get in, but the other coaches were all over it, right? And so he didn't have to, right?
Campbell also has to watch to see what he's got. Don't forget.
Oh, yeah.
He's never been a head coach before, and this is the first time all these guys have been together coaching players. So
yeah, it's neat. It was a neat approach. It was different. I walked away from it saying, this is more of a direction of what the team was looking for than previously. Now, that again, that was rookie mini camp. OTAs have mirrored that a lot. And, we'll see how it goes when training camp kicks in. But, side note on training camp, since I brought that up, they're just going to be them this year. They're not traveling anywhere. They're staying in Allen Park. They're not doing any joint practices with anybody.
Patriots.
Yeah. Well, with new coaches, it was a little bit late. You know, once they get hired, it was a little bit late for them to get in on the planning part of it. Right. So, they'd like to do joint practices in the future.
With the Rams.
But, well, I mean, who knows? Saints maybe, right?
Saints.
Yeah, a lot of Saints guys. They were kind of, I think they were just, the hiring process was, it pushed them so late that it impacted the planning process. So, but in all honesty, again, it's probably good. You know, this is a, it's a first year team. And so it'd be nice to be able to let them just work within themselves. The schedule, being what it is, and like having one less preseason game, and then they have cuts coming at different points now than they have in the past, right? At one point, you remember we were getting like, they had to cut like 15 guys and then 15 guys, and then they had to cut it down to 53. And then they went from, okay, it's just 90, and then you just cut to 53 all on the last week. Mm-hmm. Last year, they had to get to 80 before they could even go into camp. Or they would have had to split squad. Remember all that fun stuff?
Yeah, right? Yeah. I would have been all in on the split squad.
And then this year they've changed that as well. So you're going to have your first preseason game for the Lions. That is August 13th against the Bills. And then the following Tuesday, they have to cut five players, get down to 85. Then they play the Steelers later in the week on the 21st. The following Tuesday, they have to cut another five players and get down to 80. They play the Colts then on the 27th, and the following Tuesday, they have to get to 53. And then once they're at 53, they don't play that Sunday like normally. Normally you get to 53, mm-hmm. you play the following Sunday. It's not like that. With no preseason game, they go almost a full 2 weeks before they open the regular season on September 12th. So it's an interesting wrinkle. I tell you, it'll make my life a little easier cutting these guys a little bit at a time, as opposed to cutting them all in one weekend. I don't know if you recall,
they're cutting 27 guys in one weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. But they could like cut guys like on Saturday and Sunday and Monday and Tuesday, yeah. as opposed to previously it was you played a game, and then like within 48 hours, you had to cut all these players, and almost all of them had to be cut on one day. And you remember when we used to have our fantasy draft, and at the same time we'd be doing our fantasy draft, all these cuts would be coming in. It was like nuts. And so we don't have that anymore. We don't have those like large cuts happening. I think it's going to be a little bit more sprinkled, a little easier on the players, more time to kind of talk to them and let them like, you know, more time for coaches to contemplate their roster. And so, it's going to be a different type of off season. And, we still have a couple more OTAs, right? We still have, an OTA this Thursday. Then we have mini camp the following week, and they'll have one more group of OTAs in the June 14th through 17th. But that won't be open to the media, and it's not a requirement. And so a lot of the veterans will bounce, and it'll just be for like the younger players and any veterans that want to stick around. And then they're off, and then they'll take the back half of June off and the first like 3 weeks of July off. And then training camp will start in late July, and it'll be
off to the races.
For sure. Right. It'll be crazy, and it'll be a lot of fun.
All right. Finally, let's talk a little bit about OTAs that they just had. Trey Flowers, Romeo Okwara will be the stand-up outside linebacker pass rushers. We talked about that in our previous podcast, which I'm not a fan of. I think they're too big. Now there's five guys across the front that are too big, which might be fine in running situations, but I don't know in this pass-happy league how well it's going
to
work.
Well, keep in mind that when they want to shift the nickel, typically the first player off the field to add the secondary player on is the nose tackle. So they're going to lose that nose tackle a lot. And I want to make sure I'm clear with this is, Aleem McNeil is probably going to be the starting nose tackle. And if that position only plays like 40% of the time, that doesn't mean McNeil is only going to play like, if he splits that position with Pennacini 20-20, it doesn't mean McNeil is only going to see the field 20% of the time. He's also going to be able to play one of the two down spots, outside of the nose tackle, because he has that kind of flexibility. So McNeil's still going to get plenty of run, and but they're going to end up having a lot of two interior defensive linemen and then your two stand-up guys. They want and they think both Okwara and Flowers are capable of dropping. And that allows them to then use blitzers from like the secondary or the corners or all, you know, the linebackers in the A gaps, right? So I'm not as worried about it. I really thought Trey Flowers was going to be a down guy. I thought he would have really given them an advantage. Now it spreads them out a little bit more. It makes them a little bit stouter because I think you get Onwuzurike in the Onwuzurike. Jeez, oh,
Onwuzurike.
I'm saying it like I spell it. Like whenever I type his name out.
Yeah, I do that. So.
Onwuzurike is he's going to get more run. I think him in hand be rotating through one spot, Penasini McNeil through the nose, Brockers and Nick Williams and the other. I mean, and then you have Flowers, Aquara, Bryant Harris, you know, as those stand-up guys. It's a better front than what I thought they would have had. You know what I mean? But, you know, we're still a long way to go.
All right. Jelani Tavai, this is the big story. Yeah. Jelani Tavai has lost 17 pounds, but he's still not at this weight of 245 he's shooting for. He's like 248, right?
Or something. Like 240. Yeah, right in there. And just below 245. The nuts part about this story is not that he's getting down to 245 and he looks more athletic and he's starting to catch eyes of coaches, which is what they're saying. He's been talked up by multiple coaches, including Aaron Glenn. But the fact that he is down 17 and still isn't at 245 means he was playing at like 268 pounds, yeah. I think is what he said he topped out at. How in the world are you expected to play off the ball linebacker at 268 pounds? Like that to me, it just seems lunacy, right? Trey, like, just to give you a perspective, Trey Flowers is 266 pounds, right? Mm-hmm. Aquara is 252. Julian is, Romeo, I think, is 265. And Austin Bryant's 271. And those are your edge guys. And you're playing an edge guy off the ball. Well, no wonder he looked slow out there. No wonder he struggled when you put him in coverage. Asking him to play at 265, 268 pounds off the ball, that is a very, very difficult task. There's not many people in the world that can do that at that weight. And he, you know, he isn't one of them. I think we learned that last year. He's not capable of playing well at that weight. Dropping this weight, they're saying he looks more smooth. They're saying he looks like more agile. And then they're saying there's a role for him. So
you're telling me there's a chance.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I mean, if they keep four, is it Jamie Collins, Anzalone, Derek Barnes, and is Tavai four? Is he going to jump Reeves Maben, right? You know, I mean, he's played ahead of Reeves Maben his whole career. So he might already, you know, he's probably already ahead of him right now. People aren't going to like that, especially the Reeves Maben truthers who love, you know, his speed. But, I don't know. The linebacker spot is interesting. And I've talked all season about not knowing where they're going to play Tavai. And they basically said, yeah, no, we're playing him off the ball. We're going to play him off the ball. We're not going to put him on the edge. He's not going to be like a hybrid type guy. He's an off the ball stack backer. And that's what he's going to do. And maybe he can do it at 248. I mean, Jamie Collins can, right? But he's not Jamie Collins, but
no, he's not. We'll see. Yeah, I don't know. This is like an overblown story. Like, how is he going to get any better?
I
hope he can, or I hope they find a way to make him fit, because he is a second round pick. Although many argue, well, he was him and Oruwariye really flipped, right? I got Oruwariye in the fifth, but he was really a second rounder, and the Tavai is really a fifth rounder, but they got him in the second.
You know? I used to say that about Tease Tabor and Agnew. I would have said, if you flipped them, I wouldn't have known the difference. You know, and if you drafted Agnew in the second and Tabor in the fifth, I would have believed you. But it's just, you know, how it works, I guess, right? So,
we'll see how he does. I hope he's great.
It would be nice.
Fits great. He plays like a Pro Bowler and hey, then that's great. But, you know, and I guess more skeptical than that.
Sure, I understand.
All right, offensive line, left to right, no surprise. Decker, Jackson, Ragnow, Vitae, Sewell. With the second team being, you mentioned Matt Nelson, Logan Stenberg, Evan Brown, Tommy Kramer, and Dan Skipper.
Now, what's worth noting is that even though they had over 80 players, Crosby was not one of them. And that's why Crosby was not on that. Yeah. Well, I don't know if it was because he was on the trade block or not. I'm sure that's the easy jump.
Easy answer.
Yeah. Right. I don't know. I don't have anything for certain. I would tell you that Hank Fraley spoke very highly of Crosby and talked about how important of a piece he is. And then for him not to be there for the first week of a voluntary, keep in mind, voluntary. It does look kind of bad, right?
Sure. But well, if you had a wedding or something to go to, who knows?
Yeah, right. I mean, Brockers also wasn't there, but he's more established. Collins wasn't there again. He's an established player. I was a bit surprised that John Atkins wasn't there. Kennedy wasn't there.
Tom Kennedy, that's surprising. This is time to shine.
Yeah, especially because when Pip named off the five players in contention for the return duties, he was one of them. Basically, D'Angelo Amos, the undrafted kid that we talked about previously, he is the only non-slot receiver in the competition. Everyone, if you're a slot receiver, you're in the punt return, kick return competition. It's those guys and Amos. Amos has like five or six returns for touchdown in his college career. Khalif Raymond's probably the leader in the clubhouse, but they're giving Amon St. Brown looks. Kennedy as well, and so is Bolden. Bolden, they gave some looks there last year as well. He wasn't bad at all. So those are your five kind of return guys. But yeah, Kennedy wasn't there on that particular day. I mentioned earlier Boyd was hurt. So, it's special teams is always so interesting to me because that's the guys who make the last like 5 to 6 spots on the roster. And so I'd say other than St. Brown, the other guys are fringe players that I wouldn't be surprised if they got cut. Now, I do think Raymond has a good shot of sticking because he's capable of playing offense and capable of being a returner. And I think that'll give him a big advantage, but maybe an Amos is a guy who is, I think, the 7th or, you know, strong safety or 6th strong safety on my depth chart. But if he wins the return job, that's how you make it. You know, that's how you get in the league sometimes. So, interesting battles. I'm not surprised by the offensive line battles, which is why I think what started this divergent conversation here. But I'm not overly worried about guys not being at camp right now. They already said Brockers is going to be back. If Crosby's not back during voluntaries this week, it's again not that big of a deal. If he's not back for mini camp, which is not voluntary, then we're going to start talking about him getting dealt for sure, right? But right. I don't think we're there yet.
All right, Sewell. He noted that the switch to right tackle is challenging, but he's not worried. Worried?
No. He played right tackle all 4 years of high school.
I was going to say the easy transition from high school to the NFL.
Well, but the technique is the same, right? Like he played 4 years of right tackle in high school, 2 years of left tackle in college, and then a year off because he opted out, and now he's back at right tackle again. I don't think you're going to, you're still going to have some muscle memory there. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I think he'll be okay. You know, it's a hard thing to do. And we've talked about this there. You know, when you shift these guys out of positions that they're comfortable playing in, it can be challenging, but the athletes are the guys who are able to overcome those challenges and make it work. Remember, Snacks Harrison was a one technique for the longest time, and the Lions wanted him to play at the one and the three, and he could not play at the three the angles were wrong. He couldn't get a feel for it. And he hated playing at the three. And that's a big reason why he didn't want to return to the Lions and ask to be released. Like, that's 3 feet he moved. You know what I mean? Yep.
Like, no, moved, I know. That's why I'm concerned. But hearing that, you know, like, the Sewell's not super comfortable. I don't, I mean, we'll see. Hopefully he'll be fine and be a multiple time Pro Bowler at the position. But, you know.
He also practiced at right tackle all off season as well in at his facility. So I'm not worried about it. Will he have some hiccups here and there? I mean, look, all rookies do, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm not worried. I'm not as worried as it sounds like you might be.
All right. The last bit here, Quentin Dunbar's repping with Okuda or Warrior and Melifonwu. Or no, wait.
Yep.
Dunbar is doing reps with Okuda, whereas Oruwariye is doing reps with Melifonwu.
Right. And you kind of presume that Okuda is going to be a starter, right? And if they're not rotating these guys, it's very possible Dunbar is the leader in the clubhouse to start at the other side, right? It's too early, but early indications, they're giving him a the nod. And so does that surprise you or not so much?
No, not so much.
Yeah. Not me neither. And, you know, we've talked ad nauseum about the fact that there are certain positions where you need three starters for two spots and corner being the most paramount. And so you're going to need Dunbar. You're going to need Owarie. You're going to need Okuda to all be ready to play at a starter level in order to put two starters out on the field all the time. So, and maybe even me, you might even need Melifonwu, right? So,
right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just the nature of the position in the NFL.
Yep. Yeah. We'll see Mike Ford starting a game there.
What's interesting to me is their approach to nickel, because I think Mike Ford's best game as a pro was when he started at nickel shadowing against the Chiefs. Right. He basically played a nickel almost the whole game that game. And that was one of his better games. So maybe he does get some run on the inside. So let's say Corn Elder is your technical starter, but at nickel, but when you have a speed guy, maybe you lean on Mike Ford a little bit more. When you have a big guy, maybe you lean on Melifonwu a bit more. I do think it's very possible that the nickel corner position could be a matchup type position as opposed to here's our starter, let's roll with them.
Right. All right. Well, that's it. We went through everything we wanted to go through.
Awesome. You know, we got a couple more reviews, but we've been off. It's
shocking when we don't make podcasts.
Up to 376. I believe we were at like 373 last time. So we got a few more. And I believe Austin from Ohio, that's a new review. And did Honolulu Blues 16? That might be a new one too. If it's not, we're going to thank them again. Couple of those. And then 139 Keds, that looks like a new one as well to me. So I think those were the three that I noticed from our last podcast. So if we missed you, I apologize, but I'm pretty sure we're caught up with all of our awesome people that are leaving us reviews and keeping us relevant even when we have to take a week off.
We appreciate everybody listening. And that's it. That's all we got for this week. So until next time, let's go Lions.